Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Merle here with my review of the Amazon original series Fallout, which is based on the popular video game series. And I'll say right up front that I am not coming at this review from a gamer's perspective. It's one of the reasons why this review is just now coming out. I didn't jump into it immediately because I wasn't really intimate with the whole Fallout universe. I knew that it was a video game. I knew that it had something to do with the post-apocalypse and a nuclear war. I knew that it had sort of a retro feel, and I knew that the game itself was sort of an open universe roaming around sort of thing, but that's it. There are a lot of videos out there about the lore and how it fits in with the video games and things that it gets right and things that it gets wrong. If that's what you're looking for, I encourage you to go find those things. This is from the perspective of somebody that was approaching it as a show, as the introduction to all of these things. And I'll say generally that it's a show that I really enjoyed. It just got a pickup officially for a second season, so we're going to get more of Fallout on Amazon Prime. And breaking it down, I decided to do both a spoiler and a non-spoiler section. So if you haven't seen the show or if you're still watching it, I know people watch things at their own pace, I'll do my non-spoiler thoughts first, and then the second half of the video will be my spoiler thoughts. The creative team behind Fallout has a resume that's very eclectic. You have Captain Marvel on one side and Portlandia over here. You've got Jonathan Nolan kind of overseeing it as director of the pilot and some other episodes on this side. And I think that because it's such a mix on the creative side of drama and comedy and different kind of genres, that it works in the show's favor, because that's very much what the show is as well. It's a little bit of drama, it's a little bit of comedy, it's a little bit of satire. That can get real mixed and muddled if you don't have people in charge that are keeping a very close eye on the tone of the show, on the story. And luckily for Fallout, I felt like there was a very firm guiding hand that understood where to dial some things up and dial some things back that made it feel very unique and very much like its own thing. And I think that that's one of the reasons why it's become so popular with people that know the games and with people that don't know the games. It's hard to handle something like the nuclear apocalypse with a light touch, but Fallout manages to do it. It introduces you to some characters that you know. It raises questions, some of which are answered in this first season, and then bigger questions that are set up for what's going to happen in later seasons. In other words, it really does everything that a good first season of a show should do. It leaves you satisfied in and of itself, and it also leaves you wanting more for what's going to happen next. The pilot episode, I think, did a really good job of letting us into this universe from the ground floor. And I know that it's a little bit jarring for some people that it's the only episode that's divided into chapters. You have this kind of prologue, then you have the vault, then you have Maximus, then you have the ghoul. But I think it actually worked for me because you don't have to cross-cut between these different stories and worry about catching people up to where they are in the different scenes. They're little chunks of exposition and getting to know these different characters, and it then allows you in later episodes to cut between them and also to track them as they weave in and out of each other's journeys. So structurally, the pilot worked for me. I actually think it's one of the stronger pilots that I've seen for a TV show in quite some time, although I know that the idea of a pilot is kind of going out the window because it wasn't one episode that was made as proof of concept. It was just the first episode of the show. And talking about the characters weaving in and out of their own journeys, I was actually really surprised at how quickly they all met each other. I did not expect them all to converge in Philly in that second episode, and I wondered at that point how they'd sustain the storyline, but it worked pretty well. By having them all go after the same objective, it made sense that they kept running into each other, and I think the show came up with some really inventive ways to pair them off. So you get some odd duos, some people that are cooperating, some people that are at odds with each other, and it allows you to do story and character at the same time. Fallout feels like an ensemble show, but at scale. We get the vastness of post-apocalyptic Los Angeles with the intimacy of interconnected characters, and I think that it does a really good job of teasing out those character relationships in unexpected ways. I love the different tones that the show was juggling, mystery, drama, comedy, and I also liked that it wasn't afraid to go extreme in certain moments. It reminded me sometimes of The Boys with those sort of like, oh my God moments, maybe not quite as nihilistic as The Boys, but it knew when it could dial it up to 11. It never consistently rose to the level of cartoonish violence though, so much so that the violence would lose its meaning, and the drama increased as the plot began to unwind, which means that Fallout may have lured audiences in with its humor and then delivered unexpectedly for a lot of them some really strong character development. And the mystery element of the show was really compelling. I was a little worried, you know, when you bring in Jonathan Nolan, he was one of the big minds, of course, behind Westworld. Westworld was a show that got notoriously opaque and strung people along, and you didn't get answers to a lot of those mysteries, largely because the show was canceled before it was over. And I was a little worried that the same thing was going to happen here, but they did a good setup and payoff with the mysteries in the show, and I really don't get the sense that it's stringing me along. I appreciated the questions that they answered, and I was intrigued by the questions that they didn't. The performances are really what bind everything together. Walton Goggins gets the showy role as the ghoul in the future and Western star turned pitchman Cooper Howard in flashbacks. And Walton Goggins can be a delicious villain. We all know that. But what I liked about the show is they set him up as this delicious bad guy, and then we learn more about his backstory. And then the question becomes, is he so bad he's good? Is he so good he's bad? When you inform that backstory, it makes you go back and look at everything that came before. And again, I think that that is the hallmark of some really good writing and some really good storytelling, particularly when you're focusing on one of these main characters. Regardless of whether he's playing good, bad, or bad, good, Goggins also really knows how to put a little southern molasses on a line.
Right off, you want these cherry tomatoes, but you got a hole in your neck.
Ella Purnell, of course, shoulders a huge amount of the fallout burden as Lucy. I'd seen a few of her roles, although not her most high-profile one in Yellow Jackets, and I think that she was a great choice to anchor the show. Lucy's an interesting character in that she serves as a conduit for the audience twice over. She is our entry point into the world of the vault, and she's also our entry point into the world of the wasteland. And I loved watching her go from this preppy vaulty in episode one, this very naive person, to a very hard-bitten person in the finale, but not cynical. It didn't really alter her fundamentals. It just changed her perspective and how she sees the world and made her understand that things aren't quite as innocent as she thought they were. And again, nothing that she did really seemed out of character throughout the entire series. That's what's called character development. When you can change the circumstances of a character, you can change some of their behaviors, but you don't change the core of who they are. And once again, that goes back to good storytelling. Goggins and Purnell were the key roles for me. Aaron Moton's Maximus was an interesting character to follow, and I'm looking forward to a possibly enhanced role for him in season two, maybe with more complications for his character. Technically, Maximus is the third lead of the show, but there's so much emotion behind the backstories of the ghoul slash Cooper and Lucy, and I don't think that you quite got that with Maximus. It was a little bit more comic relief, and so it felt a bit more lightweight. I didn't mind the performance. I really just think that they are perhaps saving the best for season two with Maximus, because we really end with him in this season in a place where I think we started, especially with a character like the ghoul, at the beginning of this season one. And then you have a solid supporting cast that includes Michael Emerson, Moises Arias, Kyle MacLachlan, and Sarita Chowdhury. I also have to shout out fellow Florida State alum Johnny Pemberton, who actually overlapped with me while I was at Florida State. Johnny Pemberton is an actor and a comedian who just makes me laugh pretty much whatever he does. And it was really fun to love and hate him at the same time. So before we transition into the spoiler section, just to sort of wrap up my general thoughts, I enjoyed Fallout. I had a really good time with it. I think if one of the goals was to win over non-gamers, then this season definitely succeeded. It's an effective blend of genre, comedy, action, drama, with a plot that kept me engaged and good acting all around. I can't, of course, speak from that gaming perspective, but from what I've gathered, it seems like a lot of the Fallout gamers are also happy with the season. Now, of course, there's the usual gang of malcontents that picked Fallout to be their outrage of the week, but in general, it seems like this ranks pretty high on the list of successful video game to live action movie slash TV show adaptations. It is a very small list, and so I'm glad that Fallout was not a disappointment for either people who are familiar or people who aren't familiar with the games. So when I'm looking at my overall rating, it is solidly in its good territory, almost up into See It Now territory, but a show that I would definitely recommend if you're on the fence or if you're worried about not knowing anything about the game. Don't worry about all that. This is a show that you can jump into with basically zero pre-existing knowledge. So that wraps up the non-spoiler section. Before we jump into my spoiler thoughts, I want to thank the sponsor for this video, Miracle Made. This episode is brought to you by Miracle Made. People put all kinds of thought into how and when they sleep, finding that perfect balance of too tired or not tired enough. But do you know what one of the biggest impacts on sleep quality is? Your own temperature. And if you find yourself waking up with the night sweats or shivering under the covers, I recommend checking out Miracle Made sheets. Miracle Made sheets are designed to keep your body temperature at the right spot for you. Their silver-infused fabric was inspired by NASA to regulate your temperature, and they're also incredibly comfortable without the high price tag of other luxury brands. And as a bonus, Miracle Made sheets are also made to prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth, which means they smell better and you can keep them on longer. Go to trymiracle.com/Dan to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo code Dan at checkout, you'll also get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/Dan and use the code Dan to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/Dan to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. All right, so let's jump into the spoiler section. So I'm going to be going into plot specifics if you haven't seen season 1 and you don't want to know what happens. And let's start with the ghoul slash Cooper Howard, who, as I mentioned before, is played by Walton Goggins. What I liked about his character is that the ghoul doesn't really change over the course of the season. What we know about him changes and really recontextualizes all of his behaviors and his actions. I liked the idea of meeting him as Cooper Howard and the horror of that bomb dropping prologue that was so well done. The anticipation, the follow through, it was a great way to start the show. And it really asks so many questions right off the bat, including how Cooper survived and what happened that changed him into the person that we know now, as well as what happened to his wife, what happened to his daughter. So we learn a lot about him, but we also have a lot more to learn in season 2. And as I said, the performance is just great. It's a great thing to get people excited about the show, but it's not one note. It's not sort of what they did with Negan on The Walking Dead, where it becomes almost comically evil or one note. You have so many different shades inside that performance. And I think it's one of the benefits of being able to do a character on a show where you have the scripts ahead of time and you can track that journey across the entire season without having to wait and see, all right, well, what are they going to write next week? What's going to be in the next episode? Did I make a choice in this episode that's going to contradict something I have to do later? That, I think, is one of the advantages of doing these TV shows in blocks like so many of them are done now. When you look at the exposition for what happened with Vault-Tec, you could have just done a straight flashback and a conspiracy storyline, and it would have been interesting, but I think that focusing it all through Cooper and seeing how it affects him, and then of course how it affects who he becomes in a couple of centuries, was a really smart idea, because you get all the plot specifics, you lay the pipe, as is the industry term, you tell the story that you need to tell, but you're also doing character work alongside of it. I love that we're on Cooper's face and on his reaction when he realizes not only that Vault-Tec is selling out humanity, but that his wife is one of the key people behind it. Good characters are, of course, a key component to what makes a good story. And when you take a good character like Cooper Howard and a good story like the Vault-Tec conspiracy and combine them, that elevates both of them. And I'm super excited to follow Walton Goggins' performance through these next season 2, season 3, however many more seasons the show gets, and to follow him as kind of a fun anti-hero now. I don't think he's a straight-up villain. He's definitely an anti-hero at this point. I thought for a moment, though, that he'd crossed the line and that he'd killed Wilzig's dog, CX-404. Killing a dog is basically the point of no return for villainy. But it was actually great to see that Cooper Howard, 2 centuries before, loved dogs, and he is able to carry that over into his life as the ghoul. He brings the dog back. The dog is his companion. And even that moment where he's sitting by the fire and the dog is laying there with him, and he said, "Oh, man, you're not him." That's such a kind of heartbreaking human moment for somebody Freddy who's really not human anymore. But the killing the dog thing was something that I'm glad they pulled back from, because I know people think it's crazy. They say, why do people care about animals so much? But it is just one of those rules. If you do something like that and then you ask the audience to like that person, it's going to be a very, very difficult uphill battle. Maximus and the Brotherhood of Steel wasn't my favorite storyline. I loved his relationship with Lucy, actually, more than anything. But I have to admit that when Michael Rapaport was revealed underneath the armor, I got a really good laugh out of that, because it made so much sense, the dynamic that they had, and also the difference between the guy under the armor and the guy when the helmet comes off. The guy who is the unstoppable knight who absolutely folds when he's faced with an actual threat. I thought that that was great. Some people might call it stunt casting or guest casting, but it worked. It wasn't distracting. It worked for the character.
I got a 2-ton irradiated bear on my back, and you're standing there. You know this is all your fault.
It also undercut the idea that all of these knights are brave and bold, and it speaks to a larger theme of the entire season, which is the imperfection of perfection. Every institution in this entire series that's supposed to be flawless or the ideal turns out to be corrupted. And once again, it's smart writing to weave that theme into a few different organizations throughout the show. It's a way to get a theme across without hammering you over the head. But when you look back on everything, you're like, oh yeah, that is something that all of these things shared in common. And I mentioned before that I liked how the characters were weaving in and out of each other's stories. And the scripts did a very good job of not making that seem contrived. Now, every story that you see on TV or in a movie just about is a contrivance, because it's fiction. If things unfolded the way that they would in real life, then most movies and TV shows would be incredibly boring. But here you could at least follow it along a logical path. Lucy escapes with Wilzek's head, which the ghoul can track with CX-404, which allows the two of them to meet. They then have to travel together to get more medicine. The key here is to make the contrivance of this small group of people running into each other in the wasteland makes sense, and the show does, with really only a couple of exceptions. And even the character beats and development were timed very well inside the structure of the season itself. Episode 4, for example, around the midpoint of the season, was a great time for Lucy to understand what you really have to do in order to survive in the wasteland. She bites off the ghoul's finger, she escapes the market, and yet, as I mentioned, keeps her core values intact.
I may end up looking like you, but I'll never be like you.
Episode 4 is also where we start understanding inside the vault that something is very, very wrong. And you know, I wish that we lived in a world where the idea of corporations locking humanity in underground vaults for psychological testing seemed far-fetched, but no, not really. I totally bought it.
The future, my friend, is products. You're a product, I'm a product. The end of the world is a product.
Shady Sands was a nice little mystery to unfold. At first, I thought that the people in the vault had been lied to about how long it was since the bombs had dropped, because they said it had been 200 years. Maximus said, no, the bombs dropped when I was a kid. And I thought that that was a bit of a misdirect to hide what was really happening, which is that it had been 200 years, but that Vault Tech and humanity bombed basically the largest human civilization in California back out of existence because they felt threatened by them. Fallout starts off as a show about dealing with the ramifications of what humanity did to itself, and ends up as a show about the ramifications about what humanity is still doing to itself. And that really was hidden inside of this Shady Sands storyline. This was also a great example, by the way, of setting up and resolving a mystery inside of one season that has reverberations that will go down the line in future seasons. I think if Fallout had been made in the puzzle box era of TV, even just 3 or 4 years ago, then Shady Sands is something that maybe would have taken a season and a half, or maybe even 2 seasons, to learn the truth behind it. But it made sense to find out the truth this season, because you want to move on past that to the effect of that truth. Episodes 6 through 8 were a great final stretch where the pieces really fit together well. And again, it was obvious that there was a lot of attention paid to the structure of the story and when things should happen to have that optimal impact. Vault 4 is another case of thinking you know what's going on. You think that they're evil and performing experiments, but then you find out that they're really the victims of experimentation. This season of Fallout did a really great job of establishing people that you immediately label good or bad, and then making you question whether they really are good or bad. Moldaver's a great example. She's set up as the big bad of the season, leader of the raids that killed Lucy's friends, but turns out to be a resistance fighter who wants the cold fusion technology to even the playing field and bring power back to the wasteland. There are lots of questions that still aren't answered, like how she survived 200 years after we saw her leading the fight against Vol-Tec in Coop's time, but Sarita Chowdhury was great in the role, and I'm confident or maybe hopeful that we'll see her again.
So what are you, a millionaire communist?
Hypocrisy is like violence in your movies. If you only let the bad guys use it, the bad guys win.
So many different movies and shows have done the corporations are evil beat before, but I thought that it was executed well, and I liked the idea that Vol-Tec is literally invested in warfare. Their technology is useless if there is no war.
But they can't sell Volts if these peace negotiations go through. So Vol-Tec has the fiduciary responsibility to make sure that it don't work out.
And as dystopian as it is, tell me that that doesn't ring true. The Dr. Strangelove aesthetic was great in the scene where we learned that Vol-Tec was engineering an apocalypse and letting corporations experiment on humans as they see fit. I think it also sets up some interesting possibilities for future survivors from other vaults in the seasons ahead. I also liked the whole Vault 31 conspiracy, the idea of ruling mankind through superior management.
The future of all humanity comes down to one word.
Yeah, what's that?
Management.
I never thought I'd see the day where the big bad on a show that I was watching was a brain zooming around on a Roomba, and yet it seemed perfectly logical by the time we got to that part of the season. There was some setup in the prologue about geopolitics and expecting a war with China, and I'll be interested to see if there was some manipulation on Vol-Tec's part there, or if, to quote Clue, communism was just a red herring, and this is a pure corporate strategic maneuver. Is Fallout's corporations or evil message subtle? No, but that doesn't make it ineffective. And it all sets up what I think is a potentially really interesting season two. We have Lucy and the ghoul working to track down Hank and the people behind Vol-Tec. Maximus is the de facto leader of a new Brotherhood of Steel when all he really wants is to be back with Lucy. Hank in what appears to be Las Vegas, which I've heard is tied into the plot of the Fallout video games. And then we have Thaddeus roaming around somewhere as a ghoul thanks to the world's most surprisingly effective foot injury remedy. So yeah, Fallout was just a fun, breezy, and for me, unexpectedly dense and dramatic adaptation of this video game series. And maybe it's because I just have learned not to expect much from streaming shows and not to expect much from video game adaptations. But this one really surprised me. I wasn't surprised necessarily that I liked it, but I was surprised by how much I liked it. And, you know, this is a very high-pressure situation. There were a lot of people expecting the show to fail, and I don't think that it did. It's been one of the rare times where a streamer has taken on one of these big franchises and actually been able to deliver. Hopefully, in a year or two, when we get the second season of Fallout, I can be sitting right here and giving an equally enthusiastic review of the sophomore season of this freshman hit. So what did you think? Have you watched the entire season? Are you coming at it from a gamer's perspective? Let me know down in the comments below. And as always, stay tuned right here on the channel. I've got movie news, reviews, box office, all the great stuff that we do. Thanks again for spending part of your day here with me. Until next time, stay safe, and I'll see you then. Bye.